welcome to another all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. And today, we continue our team preview series with part two, where we take a look at Dayton, Rhode Island, and Duquesne. And a quick reminder before we start, if you have not tuned in yet, be sure to go back to last week's part one. We talked about St. Louis, Fordham, UMass, and St. Joe's. Matt, shall we get things underway?
Yeah, let's get things rolling. We can go ahead and start out with a team that many are saying is the preseason favorite, someone that could be getting some top 25 votes. Maybe they'll even be ranked to start the season, but the Dayton Flyers.
Yep, I got the timer ready for 10 minutes for anyone who remembers from last episode. The Dayton Flyers returned 7 of their top 8 minutes, guys, last year. All 5 starters at the end of the season, Malachi Smith, Kobe Elvis, RJ Blakeney, Tamani Kamara, Daron Holmes, and their 2 top bench guys, Kobe Brea and Mustafa Amziel. Matt, they were the youngest team in the country last year, but almost stuck into the NCAA tournament. They were playing absolutely their best basketball of the year from the end of January until the debacle at LaSalle. Where are the Flyers going this year?
That's a great question and something I'm really looking forward to finding out. You're right, youngest team in the country last year, but this season, they're returning more minutes than anyone in the A-10. So inexperience is not going to be a problem, and it's simply not going to be an excuse this year. All signs point to Dayton having as much talent as anybody in the league. And I think the question is just, will they be able to avoid those embarrassing slip-ups and reach their potential as someone that we could not only see in the NCAA tournament, but advancing in the tournament?
Yeah, and it's all going to start with the star power. All 3 of their best guys were just significantly different players by the end of the year than they were in the non-conference. Daron Holmes ends up first-team all-conference. Tamani Kamara went from someone that was ridiculed by Dayton fans, someone who maybe wasn't even deserving of a starting spot earlier in the year, ends up all-conference himself as well. And then Malachi Smith, who just continued to grow into the next archetype of both his brother and Jalen Crutcher, of this great, intelligent, ball-moving point guard.
Yeah, and I think the star power is where you have to start. And right at the top, with Daron Holmes the second, I think there's a fair case. We all agreed on our top players podcast a couple weeks ago, but Dayton should have the best player on the court every time they play in conference this year. And unless they run into Kansas again in the battle for Atlantis, they might have the best player on the court in every game they play this year. I mean, we saw incredible strides from Daron Holmes last year throughout the season. He was already a great defensive stopper early on, but by the end of the year, he really increased his scoring ability. He was one of the most efficient 2-point shooters in the entire conference and really seemed like he developed a strong chemistry with Malachi Smith, the point guard. Those 2 guys should be able to get it rolling together. The question, I think, is more with some of the role players, can Dayton get the most out of them? Because we know the top end talent is as good as it gets in the conference. The problem is they've got to fill 5 spots on the court at all times. And I don't know about you, but I have a little bit more concerns about the 2 and 3 positions.
Yeah, well, one of my 2 big questions about the team is, who covers those second and third guard minutes outside of Malachi Smith and outside of when Kobe Brea slides down to the 2, if he happens to be playing with RJ Blakeney or maybe Caleb Washington? Right now, it's obviously Kobe Elvis as the favorite to cover a lot of that. He started on the back half of the season. He played admirably as a fill-in point guard in the NIT, something that I think might change his perception. It certainly changed how I felt about him late in the season. And then they have the 5-star freshman coming in. The offseason is over. It's time to say his name right. Mike Shiravjoms. We actually really badly overthought it. It's exactly how it looks.
That was pretty good.
Those 2 should cover most of the season at that spot. And I have Kobe Elvis as my X factor for this team. When he was on last year, he was a major, major, major piece. He's got a lot of talent, and if he plays up to his potential, he's absolutely worthy of the starting two guard spot on a top 25 team. We saw him have his great moments. There's the Duquesne game where he went 4 for 4 from three. The last game of the season against Vanderbilt, 20 points, 5 assists, filling in for Malachi Smith. But he just disappeared way too often. His game log is just some wild stuff. End of February, three straight single-digit points games. He had 11 against Davidson and then had 9 combined in the two A-10 tournament games. So can he hold on to that spot? Because with all the talent on this bench and where this team's expectations are, the inconsistency is not going to cut it this year.
I think on a team that was more hot and cold than anybody last year, Kobe Elvis epitomized that more than any player on the roster. And remember, he got benched in the Kansas game. That's the one time all year he didn't even get into the game. And like you said, right in the non-conference periods of conference play, he just completely disappeared. But other times he was the biggest scoring threat on the court on either side. And that's what Dayton's going to need to get. Whether it's him or sixth man of the year, Kobe Brea, they're going to need a productive scorer alongside Malachi Smith, because I think we've seen that's not really Smith's biggest strength. He's more of a facilitator and then someone that causes havoc on the defensive end. But at this point, I don't really think Dayton needs him to be that big time scorer. It's probably got to be one of the Kobes picking up a lot of that load out of the backcourt.
I think both of them will kind of share that load, but Kobe Elvis, too, is an above average and I'd say underrated defender. He can handle a lot of the tougher assignments in any situation where Malachi Smith is maybe a little bit undersized. And when Anthony Grant goes to that press that worked so well last year, Kobe Elvis was the one at the head of that. And his quickness plus his length for that two guard spot makes him really, really effective in those situations. So I think he's someone who is definitely going to get some opportunities, even if he struggles offensively early in the year. Think what happened to RJ Blakeney last year. He was not good offensively early in the season, except for the Virginia Tech game. He kept getting chances out there because of his defense, and then things clicked again in conference play. I think the same thing will happen with Kobe Elvis. If he doesn't come out of the box hot, the defense will keep him out there, but by January, hopefully he gets it rolling.
And I think overall, too, not just with him, but for Dayton as a whole, defense is something we can be pretty confident in for the Flyers. Last year, for a good stretch of conference play, they were number one in defensive efficiency, even ahead of VCU. They finished the season second, but I think having that strong front line of Holmes and Kamara allowing them to give up the lowest percentage on 2-point shots last year in the conference. This is going to be a really strong defensive unit, and I think it's just going to be a matter of finding the right offensive lineups that can still play good defense while they're out there together.
Yeah, I mean, every guy that they put out there last year was at the very least average defensively. And I think that's on Grant. Like he really drilled it into these guys who, this is a theme with Dayton. These guys sucked on defense to start the year. They figured it out by midseason, and I don't think they had a defensive weak point. Only one thing that they could have done better is force more turnovers, but I'm not sure it really matters. And my other big question for them is, can they just flip the turnover margin? They didn't force many, but the concern is that they were a little sloppy on the other side. And good teams don't have negative turnover margins. They were giving the ball up about a time and a half per game more than they were taking it away. So it's a little nitpick, but when we start talking about good teams, you have to nitpick. That's something that's just got to get a little bit better.
And I think turnover is definitely the biggest weakness for Dayton, looking at what they did offensively last year. And it's something to be expected, I think, with an inexperienced team. Normally, I feel like with a team that has a lot of turnovers, you would expect that to come from sloppy point guard play, but it really wasn't Malachi Smith that was the problem. He had a turnover rate under 20, which is very solid considering how much he's involved in the offense, but guys like Tumani Kamara, Kobe Elvis, Mustafa Amzil all had pretty high turnover rates for guys that really weren't handling the ball quite as much. And I think that's just got to be a team chemistry thing with now that this entire group is pretty much at a full season of playing together. Those silly, careless turnovers need to cut down for Dayton, because at the end of the day, too, this is one of the slowest teams in the conference. There's not that many possessions in Dayton games typically, and they just can't be giving the ball away when each possession is so valuable for a team like that.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most important thing offensively. They actually shot the ball better than I remember. They were a very, very good shooting team, just outside the top 50 nationally, one spot below the national champions in Kansas. So certainly good enough to take them far. And that was without anyone really being an elite shooter besides Kobe Bryant. It was just a lot of guys who were slightly above average. So not much room for regression there. They're going to be an awesome, awesome two-point shooting team, reminiscent of the 2020 team. I think that's going to be their strength once again. So,
yeah, I mean, that's something we've pretty much seen every year. Like, even the bad Dayton teams under Anthony Grant have been very efficient converting at the rim. And with Holmes and Kamara, you would think that number is going to keep up. I guess now that we have a pretty good idea of Dayton's top seven players, is there anyone else on the roster that you could see having a big impact? Because really the only two pairs of shoes to fill are backup guard Elijah Weaver and then Mulay Sissoko, who filled in at the five occasionally when Holmes was on the bench last year.
We're going to see at least one of the four, possibly two, between Sharav Jumps. Yep, I think I got it.
Got it.
The Georgia transfer, Tyrone Baker, Caleb Washington, and the disappearing Zimino Kaji. Like, one of those guys will make their way into the top eight this year. And you actually think about the idea that at least two of them probably won't play at all. It's going to be tough to figure that out. That's a very good problem to have, because all of those guys are super capable of doing it.
I think so. And I think the only depth concern for Dayton, like, clearly there's so much talent across the board, but if something does happen to Malachi Smith again, or one of the other guards, like it did at the end of last year, that really does put a lot of pressure on Sharav Jumps, because really I just see him, Malachi Smith, and the two Kobes. They're kind of the only true guards on the roster. Maybe RJ Blakeney, if he had to, could fill in at the two, but, or if you want to run some Caleb Washington point forward like they did in garbage time in a few instances. There's not a whole lot of backcourt depth. It's a very long team, a lot of size down low, but if I had to nitpick on like where something could go wrong, that's where I see it the most.
That spot was a disaster last year. Malachi Smith getting a technical at the end of the first half for his third foul against Austin Peay, and then getting hurt at the end of the first half against the Richmond game is what kept them out of the tournament. Because they had double-digit leads, they were pulling away in both of those games, and then without him in the second half, or most of the second half, the Austin Peay game, they sucked. That can't happen this year. And that might be the difference between winning 15 games and winning the A-10, or winning 14 and ending up a game back of St. Louis or VCU.
And I think if any team knows how thin the margin is to make it to the tournament, it's Dayton, literally being the first team out and getting that NIT one seed. I think that's just going to be so important too. They've gotten all the praise this offseason. They've gotten all the expectations, and it's pretty well deserved, I would think. But can they come out of the gates hot this season, be ready to go from the opening tip off against new Division I team Lindenwood on the first night of the season? You would think they have learned their lesson, but each game is going to be so critical. And Dayton does have a good non-conference this year, too. A lot of tough games on the schedule and chances to build a resume. So we'll just have to wait and see if they can have a little bit more consistency, because that was the difference between the NIT and maybe making a deep run in March last year.
Yeah, I mean, this was a big summer. We'll see how they come out. I think they'll be prepared, but the biggest thing for me is just, do we see improvements out of those role guys? the three stars are going to be what makes this team really good this year. But if someone like Blakeney, Elvis, Brea, Shirov Jumps, Washington, Amziel, if any of those guys can just become a big borderline star for this team in the way that Trey Landers or Ryan Mixel was, that's the difference between being a good team or winning the conference, being in the top 25, winning some NCAA tournament games. So we'll see if those guys come through.
Yeah, and that was the key, too, with that 2020 team. Everyone remembers Jalen Crutcher and Obi Toppin, but, I mean, it was that whole lineup that was amazing, top to bottom, and that's what Dayton's going to need this year.
All right, the timer went off a little bit ago while I was on mute trying to find my computer charger.
Oh, I never heard the timer. I was just trying to keep it rolling. We could make it a whole Dayton episode if you want.
They're the preseason number one. They are deserving of going past the timer. But we do need to move along to the Rhode Island Rams, who have a coach who is very, very familiar to the Dayton fans in Archie Miller. He brings back a few guys from last year, Sebastian Thomas, Jalen Carey, Ish Leggett in the backcourt, and Malik Martin in the front court. They also add a very familiar face to those who watched the league last year, and especially those who listen to this podcast. Breon Freeman, all rookie team at George Washington, transfers over, the first interconference transfer in the A-10, I believe, in history.
Yeah, first one we've seen in a while, that's for sure. And I think you could take the beginning of our UMass preview and apply it to this one, because Rhode Island is a situation where they've got a new head coach that we're very excited about. They've got a lot of really interesting new pieces coming in that could be very talented. And the question, which we're not really going to find out for a while, is how well is it all going to come together? And where is this team going to end up? Are they actually in the top half of the conference where they could make some noise?
Yeah, well, I want to answer the will they finish top half question with a question of my own. Is this team going to be elite at anything? They got a great young point guard in Freeman, but there's at least a half a dozen other teams in this conference that can say the same thing. It's the deepest position in the A-10 this season. And when I look up and down the roster, I see a lot of decentness. This is a team that's going to be solid in so many areas, but I'm not sure that they can really hang their hat on any one thing in particular.
Yeah, I think that's something that Archie's going to have to do, establishing his identity at Rhode Island. And that took some time at Dayton. I'm not sure it ever really happened for him at Indiana. But in terms of the returning talent, you've got a few really solid players, but none of them are all conference caliber, or at least they haven't been to this point. And I think it'll just be a matter of, with the coaching change, can Archie get more out of these guys and help them reach their potential? And it seems like that's what he did at Dayton. Guys like Devin Oliver, V. Sanford, Jordan Seibert, all who didn't have much opportunity early in their careers and turned into stars at Dayton. So one guy in particular, I do really like Malik Martin this year for Archie. I think he's going to be the perfect small ball four to build around, someone that will play that tough level of defense that you used to see on the Dayton teams. And same with Ish Leggett, just a tough, strong guard in the backcourt. But can these guys reach the next level and go from decent role players to being great?
Yeah, I'm really not sure about that for any of those guys. And one name that I would throw in, my big X factor for this team, is Sebastian Thomas, who I think is going to have to play a good amount at the point guard spot for them this year, because they're going to need Breon Freeman to score more than maybe you would think initially, because I'm just not sure where this team is going to be offensively. Freeman's going to be able to distribute, but they're going to need to play him on the wing a bit. And Sebastian Thomas was a guy who really had his moments. He had a really good, like, 5-minute stretch against Providence in their biggest game of the year, but just never played the minutes that he needed to really contribute in a big way.
Yeah, aligning the offense is going to be kind of tricky. And one thing that does jump out, we all know how bad Rhode Island was shooting the ball last year. They were one of the worst 3-point shooting teams in the country, really, just based on the the low number of attempts that we're putting up. And we're used to seeing Archie Miller teams shoot the ball well. So I'm just wondering where that's going to come from. We know Breon Freeman's a really good 3-point shooter. Otherwise, we haven't really seen it from Malik Martin at Rhode Island. He put up good numbers back in the day at Charlotte. But otherwise, I mean, Jalen Carey started making a few threes last year, but I don't think that's going to be his game. My concern is where they're going to get that outside production. And maybe it will be from some of the newcomers, because if there's one thing to be excited about with Rhode Island, I think it is this freshman and transfer class. The biggest name probably being Brandon Weston, a 6'5 wing who was at Seton Hall last year, but was limited to just one game due to injury and ended up taking a medical redshirt. I see him as a guy that could potentially fill a lot of those minutes on the wing right from the jump. And then also a couple of interesting 6'11 big man prospects. Alex Chico from Alabama, limited to just three games last year, but seems to show a lot of potential as a versatile big man. And then they've also got Joseph Atbelau from Wichita State, who came off the bench as a center.
Yeah, and I actually want to go back. I want to hit both of those points, but you hit on my second big question, which is, can this be a decent 3-point shooting team? And I think what Jalen Carey did, 46% on really limited attempts, will probably happen again. He can be in the 40s, but it'll be on pretty limited attempts because he's not a great defender. He doesn't move the ball. I just don't think he'll play that much for this team. Ish Leggett was at 31%. He was in the 40s on a really low volume his freshman year. That's a guy who really, really needs to get it going from three. Sebastian Thomas at 21%. That's going to have to get to at least average. But you're right. They don't bring back anyone who was close to reliable at all from that spot. Although the only one you can even say fit that bill on last year's roster was Jeremy Shepard, 34% on over 100 attempts. But they were a bad shooting team last year. They don't bring in much in the way of shooting besides Freeman. So that's something that could be a concern. But in terms of the front line, I think Chukwu's going to play a huge role for this team, or at least have a chance to do so early on. I know that Archie Miller has played small and successfully played small in the past, especially at Dayton. And Malik Martin is someone who physically kind of looks like junior, senior year Kendall Pollard. I don't think you can get away with playing Malik Martin at center in this conference in your big games, though. I mean, think about that against Dayton, VCU, St. Louis, George Mason, Davidson. Like, you're going to have to match those teams on the interior and on the boards to win those games. And to be a successful team, you're going to have to win games against those five. So Chukwu's going to have to step up early in the year, unless one of those two freshman bigs really becomes a force. But and Chukwu's a former top 100 recruit. He went to Alabama. We've all seen how great that program's been the last few years. And had he been able to stay healthy, definitely could have been someone who made a difference on a tournament team last year.
Yeah, and I mean, he's kind of a mystery. Some of the other high profile freshmen are mysteries too, just because we haven't seen them at the D1 level much, if at all. But that's where the excitement is. Like you said, Chiku is a top 100 recruit. Brandon Weston's a former top 100 recruit. Lewis Hutchinson, also a true freshman at 6'7", who could maybe play the four, had a lot of high major offers as well. So there's going to be opportunities for these newcomers, just given the lack of returning players and also just having a new coach that's going to want to do things his way. And still love the potential of Rhode Island in the long term. I'm curious to see how it plays out early in the season, just due to so much inexperience across the board. And it's really just going to be a matter of how do the pieces fit together, and can Archie put together some sort of recipe for success where this fits together? Because I think that's kind of been the problem for Rhode Island the last few years. Talent has never been at a shortage, and I would say the same this year. There's a lot of talent, but the roster just has never really worked ever since you could say their last great team in the 2019-20 season.
Yeah, and this is a roster that I think does fit together well and does work. The potential for a Martin Chico front line could be really good. I love the Brown-Freeman-ish Leggett combo. I think Leggett's the perfect guy to be his running mate, someone who's going to take some tough assignments on defense. He's a great cutter, a decent shooter, someone who's going to give Freeman just a lot of places to pass to. But we'll have to see if this team can be good on the top end. It's just like UMass. We know they have enough talent to at least be decent this year. They're not going to finish in the bottom four like last season. There is absolutely no chance of that. But I think we got to close out with a quick mention of the ultimate wild card for this team. And that's Anthony Harris, who was in the rotation for North Carolina throughout the regular season last year, kind of fell out. Puff Johnson basically took his minutes in the tournament. He right now is academically ineligible. He's actually not even enrolled in the school for the first semester, but they're hopeful that he'll be there come conference play. He was a five-star top 50 recruit last year who was playing minutes for a team that ended up in the national championship game. If he makes it onto this roster for the second half of the year, that completely transforms their ceiling.
Yeah, I think it does, and it is unfortunate to hear that he won't be on the team, at least for the first semester. And I mean, that is a game changer if he comes back, and I would wonder what kind of impact he could have potentially in the second half of the season if he does hopefully return. But I mean, that has shown though that Archie has worked hard to bring in a lot of talent, and hopefully this one works out too.
Yep, Rhode Island, just another one of the big question marks for this year. But we'll close it out with a team who has some question marks, but some question marks in the positive direction. And that is the Duquesne Dukes, who return Trey Williams, Kevin Easley, Austin Rotrov. And I think right now it's time to put last season to bed. They finished the year on a 17-game losing streak. And it was a really, really rough go for the Dukes in 2022. And my entire outlook for this team coming up actually has nothing to do with last year's team. They completely revamped the roster. And when you look back, there's so many things that went wrong that were just un-Keith Dambrot-like for these guys. Over the last 7 years, that's the end of his time at Akron and his first 4 years at Duquesne, Dambrot's teams were top 100 in the country in three-point defense five of those 7 years. Last year, they were the fifth worst in the country. The last 3 years, they finished top 100 nationally in assist percentage. Last year, they were the eighth worst in the country. And in terms of foul rates, if you add together offensive and defensive, only games featuring the Princeton Tigers had less foul shots than Duquesne. Their backcourt was just not aggressive in any way, not defensively, not passing the ball, not attacking the rim. That's the dead opposite of what Keith Dambrot has had. So for me, that's it. That's the last I intend to talk about the 2022 season, because that team is gone. And other than my individual evaluations of Trey Williams and Austin Rotrov, I don't think there's anything that's even worth bringing forward for our outlook on this year's team.
No, there's not much. Like you said, pretty much everything you could imagine did go wrong for Duquesne last year. Although you mentioned the three returning players, and really when I think about what they had on last year's team, if you had to pick three guys to come back, I think those are the three, because with Trey Williams, you've got a really solid interior defender, even though he is a little bit undersized at 6'7", but he's someone that can contribute on both ends of the court. Same with Kevin Easley, who might be one of the few returning like three-point threats that they've got. And then Austin Rotrov, who Coach Dambrot talked about a lot with you on our last podcast, how he's stuck with Duquesne through thick and thin. He's been with the program for, I believe this is his fifth year now. And he's the type of perfect role player that's got the experience to help all these new faces get acclimated to the team and find their spot.
Yeah, I mean, Rotrov is the perfect guy to bring back. He's just going to play 15 minutes, rack up a ton of rebounds, and just basically be somewhere around average in both the scoring department and defensively. It's exactly what you want in your backup center. And I think him and Williams kind of epitomize where Duquesne's going to be really good this year. And that is that they should just pummel teams on the boards. This is a big Duquesne team. And anytime those two and Bowling Green transfer Joe Reese are out on the court together, that's going to be a really tough front line. One that I think can play tight games with the best teams in this conference and just absolutely bully the undersized ones.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we used to see from Duquesne a couple years ago when they were throwing out Marcus Weathers and Michael Hughes together, even though wasn't the biggest front line by height. Those guys played much bigger than their size. And I think with Joe Reese joining the rotation, we could see more of the same. But I think the biggest additions for Duquesne have to come in the backcourt. And that's where the Dukes completely overhauled their roster. Last year, they were mainly using a tandem of freshmen, Jackie Johnson and Primo Spears, in the backcourt. This year, it's the complete opposite. They got two experienced mid-major transfers, Tevin Brewer from Florida International and Day-Day Grant from Miami of Ohio. Both guys that have scored a lot of points in their time, have dished out a lot of assists. So that should clearly help Duquesne improve from where they were on that mark last season. But overall, just so much more experience at that position, which is going to pay off huge dividends.
Yeah, and my biggest question for this team is simply, how do the three veteran mid-major transfers translate to the A-10? Because you look at their stats last year, Day-Day Grant was basically just a more mature version of what Primo Spears gave the Dukes. And then the other two, in Brewer and Reese, they really fill the biggest problems that the Dukes had. Talked about, they did not pass the ball. One of the worst assist teams in the country. Tevin Brewer was 10th in the nation in assist rate. Like, he was right behind Yuri Collins and is someone that could actually legitimately challenge him for the A-10 assist title this year. Joe Reese, had he played enough minutes, would have been top 30 in the country in fouls drawn rate. His number was equal to Johnny Davis, who ended up getting a Taco Bell commercial and a spot in the lottery. He was better than Hunter Maldonado, who everyone thinks is going to be the Mountain West Player of the Year. Like, these are guys who were really, really productive at schools that played in a league, what, a notch down from the A-10? It's certainly not any more than that. But if they can keep 80% of their production in a better league, then that automatically takes Duquesne out of the conversation for the worst in the conference this year.
I think so. And I think the question, we know that on paper, the talent looks a lot better than it did last year for Duquesne. And it's just a matter of how it comes together. I think specifically with Brewer and Grant, and then we'll even add in Trey Clark, the former VCU player who spent some time at Northwest Florida State in between. Like, how does that backcourt all fit together? Can Brewer and Grant share the scoring load effectively while still both distributing the ball and keeping up their high assist numbers, leading to an efficient offense? Because they both kind of did a lot of the same things at their old respective schools, and now we're going to be expecting to see them on the court together a lot more at the same time.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Trey Clark. Because another issue that Duquesne had last year, not being tough on the perimeter defensively. They're not going to have that issue with Trey Clark. Mm-hmm. That was the one thing that he always brought to the court when he was playing for VCU. And you can just see this coaching staff was so deliberate at looking at, what did we stink at last year? Oh, this? All right, let's go get a guy who does this. Because, by the way, the only things they were good at, they didn't turn the ball over. And they were great at blocking shots. Well, why were they great at blocking shots? Trey Williams and Austin Rotrov. And those two guys are back.
Yeah, I think so. And I think overall the theme of the offseason for Duquesne just has to be not looking too much into what happened last year. Because clearly once things fell off the rails in the middle of January, It never got back on track. They didn't improve it any of their major problems, and that's what led to the catastrophic losing streak. But what I think you have to remember is that despite such a disastrous season, Keith Thambrot's still a 500 coach at Duquesne, taking into consideration a year where they go 18 games under 500. And I think you just need to focus on what they have done in years prior, the types of similar transfers that they brought in this year. I mean, they've had similar levels of talent before. And it's just a question of can they address all of those problems and get back out of the basement to where they're putting up a lot more of a fight against the good teams of the conference.
Yeah, and I mean, last season was the first losing year for Keith Dambrot since he came back to college basketball in 05. It was a hell of a streak for two schools that have neither one been anywhere near powerhouse status in this century. But I want to slide over to my X factor, and that's another undersized point guard in Kareem Rozier, who maybe won't play a ton this year because it's going to be tough to put him and Brewer out together defensively, both standing at 5'9". But with the unfortunate news this week that Tevin Brewer had some complications related to an appendectomy and might miss the start of the season, they're going to need Rozier at the beginning of the year to come out and give them something next to Day-Day Grant. He was someone that Coach Dambrot talked about. He was the leader of an undefeated high school team in Michigan. And he's maybe more of an X factor for next season. But he's definitely going to have to contribute this year.
Yeah, and I think that should make all A-10 fans a little bit nervous when you hear the words undersized point guard, because we all remember some of the huge games Tavian Dunmore used to have. But overall, it does look like a pretty talented freshman class. Another guy I've noted is David Dixon, who at 6'8" could see some time, maybe at the 4 or 5 for Duquesne. This is a guy with offers from Dayton, San Diego State, and a lot of solid power five. So if there was another freshman we could see with more of an impact this season, that's who I would look to right now.
Yeah, and I want to close this out by covering my last question, which is Kevin Easley good? Because he was such a huge enigma coming into last year. Freshman of the year in the SoCon at Chattanooga. Basically couldn't get off the bench at TCU. And then did absolutely nothing last year to convince us that he's not the most inconsistent player in college basketball. And my stat of the week here. In the regular season, he had 20 double-digit scoring games. You know how many 20-point games he had? None. He actually hit that mark in the A-10 tournament against Rhode Island. But nothing says just mediocre quite like putting up 12 points consistently from game to game. And Kevin Easley's just more talented than that. It was an awful, awful spot for him. Having to play the four all year with a bunch of guards who didn't pass the ball. This is a way better team, and he should succeed this year. I kind of see him having the potential to, at his best, be kind of a more offensive leaning ticket Gaines. Easley's an awesome rebounder. By the way, he's a good defender too. He had 2 5-steal games last year, but that shot is pure. He is a guy that, if the offense is humming and he starts getting open looks in the corner, could lead the A-10 in 3-point percentage. Or it could just be last year again, where he's chucking up bad shots all the time. And he's someone that we're just lamenting is not using his talent right. But he's the biggest ceiling raiser for the Dukes. If he gets it going, and if these guards help him to become a better player, he's a big all-conference candidate. And that's when we start talking about the Dukes not only staying out of the basement, but maybe fighting their way into the middle of the league, or possibly even better.
I think so. I think he is someone to keep an eye on. And even though he didn't have a whole lot of huge games, as you mentioned, out of guys on the team last year that were in the key rotation, he was second on the team in offensive rating behind Tyson Acuff, who entered the portal. So, I mean, game to game, like, he didn't have a bad season, but I do think Duquesne needs someone to take a big step up in scoring, maybe he could be the guy because it does seem like he's got the talent to do it.
He definitely does. That one is not an open-ended question to me. But that does it for our second round of team previews. Be sure to go back and listen to the first episode. If you enjoyed listening to us talk about Duquesne, you know what's even better? Keith Dambrot talking about Duquesne. So go back and listen to that episode from earlier in the week. And other than that, we thank you all for listening to this edition of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, if you enjoyed it, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. And we really appreciate any feedback that you can provide to us. So please reach out to us on Twitter at the number 3BidLeaguePod or our email, 3BidLeaguePod@gmail.com. We'll be back next Thursday with another set of team previews. You can kind of start to figure out who's left as we hit the halfway point of the conference. So please be sure to tune in.